What's your current living situation? Are you on the street?
I stay in a hotel.
That's Doug. He's a 30-something-year-old resident of San Francisco. He's talking to Bruce, a benefits counselor from the Homeless Advocacy Project. They're sitting down at the methadone clinic at San Francisco General Hospital, filling out an application to get Supplemental Security Income, or SSI. Doug's applied for it before, but this time he has Bruce's help.
What meds are you taking right now?
Wellbutrin.
Yeah.
Trazodone, yep. And clozapine.
The first time, the Social Security Administration determined that Doug was not disabled enough to qualify. He has been living on the street since he was 14, and in that time he has been abused and sexually assaulted many times. He's applying for SSI based on post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, and personality disorder.
We got to fill out this sucker.
SSI is known as a safety net for people who are disabled, blind, or of retirement age. But in order to get an SSI check, you need to be poor, as determined by federal standards. The Social Security Administration says you are ineligible if you have more than $2,000. And the general rule is that any assets that can be liquidated into cash count towards that limit. You can keep your car or your home and still get SSI, but you stop getting the checks if you save the money to buy those things. In other words, advocates say, SSI can provide stability, but never the opportunity to change economic circumstances in the long run.
There is, unfortunately, an inaccurate and outdated measure that is used to assess what it actually takes families in order to meet their basic needs.
That's Jenny Chung, program manager at the Insight Center for Community Economic Development. She says the eligibility requirements for programs like SSI are based on U.S. consumption patterns from half a century ago. That's when the federal poverty guidelines were created.
This particular measure was developed in the early 1960s based on 1950s food consumption data, which showed that families spent a third of their after-tax income on food. That methodology, unfortunately, has not changed, and yet consumption patterns among families and individuals have changed. The problem there is that the federal poverty guidelines really underestimate the income that's needed.
This underestimation of the cost of living impacts the working poor dramatically. The federal poverty guideline is used as the eligibility determination for about 80 different social programs, not just SSI.
So what happens is you have families and individuals facing increasing costs for their basic goods, and yet when they seek assistance, they're actually shut out. The problem is that they're still struggling. So they make too much to qualify for certain supports, and yet not enough in order to meet their basic needs on their own.
Chung and other groups want to change the way government assistance is made available. They want poverty prevention.
Our first policy proposal would be that we want to make a shift, a paradigm shift, away from discussing poverty and more towards discussing economic security. And more specifically speaking, replacing the federal poverty guidelines, one with a measure that's geographically specific. The federal poverty guidelines are the same throughout the continental U.S. And it also needs to look at more than just food. Folks need more than just food in order to survive. They need housing, they need health care, transportation, childcare.
Chung and her colleagues at Insight have been doing advocacy for about a dozen years at the state, local, and federal level to try and redefine federal poverty guidelines. And that work is starting to pay off. In 2009, the Measuring American Poverty Act was proposed in Congress that would update the federal poverty guidelines. Chung says if passed, it would be groundbreaking.
The federal poverty guidelines would be recalculated based on a methodology designed by the National Academy of Sciences. It would also call for a calculation of a decent living standard. There has, for many years, been a lot of local and even statewide support and recognition that the federal poverty guidelines need to be updated, but this is really the first time that we've seen legislative movement at the federal level to update those guidelines.
Chung says that there are some local and statewide programs that are looking beyond the federal poverty guidelines in creating eligibility requirements. In 2008, the mayor of New York City came up with a new equation to assess poverty in the metropolitan area. Massachusetts has another example.
Our Massachusetts partner actually was able to successfully raise the asset limit for Medicaid in Massachusetts from $2,000 to $10,000. So that made a huge difference for seniors there in terms of accessing that very vital resource.
But there's still a lot of work to be done to move from safety nets to poverty prevention on a national scale. Chung says this approach would be cheaper and better for the economy in the long run.
Preventative measures are much cheaper than reactive measures. And as a society and as an economy, we would benefit more if we focus more of our efforts on providing this necessary preventative care and making sure that our families and seniors had enough to meet their basic needs.
Okay, that's it.
In the meantime, Bruce Borton keeps working on getting Doug some much-needed relief.
Turn in your application. Thank you, Douglas. I'll see you next week.